Welcome back to Brain Body Movement, the podcast for those interested in everything nutrition, training, and mindset. I'm one of your hosts, Brad, and I'll be joined by my co-host, Brock. Today's episode was a Q&A where we answered four questions that got sent to us through social media. Question number one, I'm currently following a four-day per week upper lower program. How would you recommend I structure my training if I can only get in 3 days? Question number two, I have an extremely weak core and overactive hip flexors. How can I strengthen my core without my hip flexors taking over? Question number three, I'm a cyclist. Will weight training help me get better? And question number four, what's the weirdest meathead thing you have done to hit your protein goals? That was in the back half of the show. And in the front half, we discussed a lens to look at your life through, my fat loss plan, a study segment, and a couple of random facts. All right, enjoy the show.
Look at life through this lens. Will it matter in 5 minutes, 5 hours, or 5 years?
I love this. It gives you a broader perspective of like in the moment situations that just won't matter. Like the 5 seconds, it might matter. In 5 minutes, maybe, but 5 years? No, I doubt. Most things won't matter in 5 years. And if they do, then they're the ones that you got to really look after and stuff. Like this fight that we're having right now, 5 seconds, it's still going to matter. But like in 5 minutes, will it matter? But 5 years? It depends. Like if it's a fight that you have with someone, you got to repair it now, or you got to just like leave it, because then that might build up, and then in 5 years you'll be like, "Fuck, probably should have like addressed that at the start of the relationship." But I think this is a good fact, and I actually said this to the missus like a couple of months ago as well. It was like, I think it was something to do with something going on, and I'm like, so is this gonna matter in like 5 seconds? She's like, yes. I'm like, what about 5 minutes? She's like, yeah, probably. I'm like, what about 5 years? She's like, well, no, probably not. I'm like, so why are you worrying about it now? She's like, oh, I don't know, because it might affect me in 5 years. It's like, but really, what will it? I'll tell you right now, it's not gonna. So it's it's kind of like putting the long filter on instead of the short filter. Like if you're angry at something, like someone cuts you off in a car somewhere, like in traffic, and you're like, well, even 5 minutes, that won't even matter, because you might turn down a different, unless you crash, and especially not 5 years. Like you're not going to remember shit from like 5 years ago in traffic. I mean, in saying that, I do remember someone driving when I was coming back from swimming. And I was like 10 or something, and they weren't wearing a seatbelt. And I'm like, I'm going to remember that license plate number, UME 592. And I still remember it to this day.
I just grasped them up on the body.
But yeah, but most things just won't matter.
I think on the back of that, there's the 5 and 5 rule. So if it doesn't matter in 5 years' time, then don't spend more than 5 minutes worrying about it. Like things can happen that can trigger an emotion, a feeling, a response within you. And that could be that person pulling out in front of you, driving your car, and you're like, fuck you, dickhead, pulling out in front of me, putting my life in danger by being in an aggressive, reckless driver. But in 5 years' time, again, caveat, unless you have the accident, 5 years' time, is that really going to matter? So yeah, you can have that thought. You can be triggered. You can have that feeling, have that emotion. But don't let it dwell on more than 5 minutes, and don't go into work and be like, how's this dickhead pulled in front of me today? And every conversation you have throughout that day is revolved around that one incident that happened. So it doesn't matter in 5 years' time. Don't worry about it for more than 5 minutes. Let it go.
Yeah.
Let it go. I mean, you sang it beautifully from the room in London.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got it. You just got to let it go.
I mean, that's with lots of things. It would, like, we're using the car example, right? But it could be anything. Like the amount of like bickering that couples do is over stupid trivial shit that isn't going to matter in 5 years' time. And then they take that feeling and emotion to bed, probably have a poor night's sleep. Like, just either address it or let it go. Like, there's no point worrying about it if it's not going to affect you in 5 years' time. Now, to bring it potentially to health and fitness, you jump on the scale. You don't like the number that you see. In 5 years' time, are you going to remember what you weighed that morning? Highly unlikely. So why get all caught up and bent out of shape over a number that pops up on a piece of plastic when you stand on it? Like, it's a, I get it's a data point, and I get it does reflect on lifestyles, habits, and behaviors to a certain extent, but it's not the be all and end all. Like, you woke up, you probably felt good waking up out of bed. You got a good night's sleep. You'd eaten well the night before. You'd trained. You were feeling good. And then you got on the scale and it didn't move the way you wanted it to, or it reflected a number that you didn't want it to. And then you get a bee in a bonnet about it and you worry about that number all day. This is a classic example of it's not going to matter in 5 years' time. So don't let it affect you now, because it's a common thread I see with people that I work with. A number on the scale will affect their food decisions that day. It'll affect how much they want to exercise. It'll affect how much they push themselves, or the level of intensity they train in the gym. They'll go balls to the wall to the point of borderline injuring themselves or creating crippling soreness and overtraining because they feel as though they have to punish themselves because of a number on the scale. Like, that number's not going to matter in 5 years' time. So acknowledge it, see it, but then let it go, move on. Oh, that wasn't what I wanted. Let's see what it is tomorrow. I'll take the weekly average, like the boys say.
Yeah, that's massive mistake that I see people doing. It's just taking
It's huge.
the single data point from the scale of like, yeah, I'm just going to weigh myself once a week and it'll be right. And then the emotions will come from that. It's very important, in my opinion, that if as long as you don't have a emotional attachment, too much of an emotional attachment with the scale over the years, weighing yourself daily, at least for 2 weeks, just to see the different averages and you can compare the weeks, is a great tip when you're first starting out, or at least if you wanted to start off on like a little fitness journey, because it does show you that what you eat throughout the day, how much fluid you have, how much you sweat, how much exercise you do, all affects what that number on that scale will be from the day to day. So it might go up, it might go down. And depending on how much food you're actually eating, and over the 2 weeks, that will determine whether you're in a calorie deficit, around maintenance, or in a calorie surplus. So when you see one number, say 100, for example, and then it goes up to 101 the next day, you're like, fuck this, I'm fucked. And then that could destroy you for the next day's following. Whereas if you had waited and you're like, say, you're in a deficit, or you think you're in a deficit, say the next day it went down to like 99.9, and you're like, oh, okay, I just had like a late dinner, or I weighed in earlier than I had, like I didn't go to the toilet, I forgot to. All these little things. Like I still get people saying, oh, I went to the toilet before I went to, like went to the scale this time. I'm like, oh, there's a big difference. I'm like, there is a big difference. Like sometimes up to a kilo, sometimes like even more. Like it's ridiculous how much like just water, plays in these daily fluctuations, and that's why we average it, because it just smooths out the up and downs of everyday life. So yeah, if you are thinking about the scale and just hopping on it once a week or even once a month, like sometimes that can be good if you like have a big goal weight, and like it's just you're getting destroyed because it's just not moving down. Like I can see some people like it might be better that way, but if you're okay with the scale, just seeing the daily fluctuations, and then you can go, okay, so obviously my averages are around the same. This is what food that I've been eating. I need to change something, or I'm good with these calories or with these food choices. Like I'm going to keep going because my weight trend is going down, and it might be only like 300 grams or 400 grams. That's still like nearly what is that, 7,000 calories or something nearly. In that, like half a kilo, which is a pound, which is 3,500 calories roughly. So that's, I don't know. So,
1700.
yeah, so it'd be like 3,500. So, still a lot. That's like a 500 calorie deficit a day. Like, you're going good. Like, it, as much as like you can see quick weight loss if you dropped all your carbs or whatever, but like over the averages, that's where you'll see like standard weight loss, instead of like the whole. Like last night, I dropped 1.8 kilos because I did a 22-hour fast. Like that's not normal. 1.8 kilos, that's a lot of calories. Like there's no way that
Yeah.
I that I ate underneath that. So yeah, it's, we say it, averages just takes it out.
And I think this is especially important for women that still have a menstrual cycle and their hormones fluctuate, and this will impact the amount of water and inflammation they have in their body during different times of the month. So majority of women, their weight can fluctuate anywhere from 400 grams to 2 kilos around their cycle. So knowing that and knowing, okay, this week leading up to my cycle, I usually weigh 500 grams more on average. Bang. You know that now because you've tracked it every single day. So that's pretty good data to have, because then you can go, okay, this isn't affecting me as much as I thought. I know that I gain roughly on average this much around my cycle. Now, to speak to the people that do have this mindset shift when they see a number on the scale, stop weighing yourself for a period of time. And then put all of your attention and focus into the processes. So the outcome you want is a number on the scale, which I would argue isn't even what you want. What you want is a certain look, shape, a feel within your body. That's the outcome you want, and you've associated a number on the scale with it. But the outcome you're wanting is a certain number on the scale. So rather than focusing purely on the outcome metric that you're measuring, focus on the processes. Okay, did I hit my protein target today? Did I stay within a calorie deficit? Did I drink sufficient water? Did I move my body, hit a step count, or get a training session in? Did I get 7 to 9 hours of good quality sleep? And just tick off those processes and make it like the four pillars of health: training, nutrition, sleep, movement. And if you tick off those four each day, and maybe there's two subcategories within each one of those four. If you tick off 8 of 8 each day, then the scale weight does not matter, because you know that you've got this plan in place to move you to the outcome that you want. So you're doing all the processes to get you there. And this is the strategy I've used recently with a couple of people that I work with, of you've got this association with a certain look at a certain number on the scale, and you're basing all your results and the
Self-worth.
outcome, self-worth, with this number on the scale. So let's stop weighing yourself and let's focus on the processes. And that's something that you can actually place a little bit of self-worth in. Am I disciplined enough to continue to stick to these? Am I disciplined enough to hit a step target every day? Am I disciplined enough to make sure I make the food choices that allow me to hit my protein target every day, or within a protein range every day? They're things that actually do associate some self-worth, because it's you being disciplined enough to do the things in order you need to do to achieve your goals, regardless of how you feel. So for those that are worried about the scale, that's what I would do. I'd focus on the processes to get you to the outcome that you want, which is a certain number on the scale. Now, speaking of a number on the scale, you mentioned a 1.8 kilogram drop on the scale yourself.
Yes.
Enlighten me. Enlighten me. Why? Well, what was the reason behind the 22-hour fast?
Yes. So I am going on an endeavor again, a little fat loss endeavor. I've planned out 6 months worth of dieting maintenance phases within it. I've got two phases in at the moment, and starting off with my 6 week aggressive cut, which is my signature program that I love
DAPA
doing.
special.
Yeah, that's it, the DAPA special. And I like, we've spoken about this before, but we like starting with like a 24 or 36 hour fast. Now, I hadn't done much fasting in a while. So I plan to do like either 24 or 36. And throughout the day, I just had not the best time with like some headaches and that.
Caffeine.
I increased my caffeine for the day as
Caffeine.
well. I said to myself, I'm just going to increase it today and see how I go. Had more electrolyte tablets than normal, but it was still kind of hanging and lingering around. I was like, okay, I'm just gonna make the executive decision just to cut it at 22 hours and had a nice meal and felt great after that. And that's the whole part of being flexible dieting. It's like you can be flexible with the time limit, you can be flexible with the foods, you can be flexible with what you say you're gonna do as well. So it's like I said 24, 36, I went 22. It's 2 hours, doesn't matter. Like why? why do I have to put such strict restrictions around this? Because that I want this to be a good endeavor, and I don't want to start off the gate sound like in pain, like why the fuck did I do this kind of thing? And then it just might flip. So if it's not a good endeavor, why the fuck would I do it?
Well, essentially, you're not making yourself bound to any principle, structure, or anything like that, right?
Yeah, it's
That
I've literally just like laid it
that's
out, and then I'm just going to adjust on the way if I need to. And there's no rules around it. Like I've got a target I want to hit. And the thing is as well that I'm not doing is I'm not putting a number on it either. Usually I would say get under 10% or get to a certain kilo weight. I'm just like, I'm going for a look now. And this is a little bit different, which is what I did in the past. It's like I would go for like a number or a percentage, like you would have heard from previous ones, like from previous episodes. But now I'm just going to go for the look and the feel and just adjust off of there. Like, and 6 months is obviously a long time, but it might go further, it might go less. It depends where I'm at. But right now I've just structured out the six. So then I have a clear plan in my head and I've just worked around certain things that I want to do as well. So 6 weeks, aggressive diet, gone with the 22-hour fast last night, and then just I had like, well, maybe yeah, 1700 calories or something last night. I had like some mince and pasta with like some yogurt, protein powder, and had some Nutella as well. Like, can't keep Nutella in this house, man, honestly. So that's gonna be hard later on, but I allow myself to have it because you know it's enjoyable for me. And yeah, so now I'm just going for the next 6 weeks. I'll be in a pretty aggressive deficit and see how I go.
So I think that approach that you're taking, like the not being bound by anything, or the what I would call the more rigid approach, it gets where lots of people slip up. And it's more the mental aspect of like, I've got this, like you've got yourself a 6 month plan, and they want to train 3 days a week. And then there's 1 week where life inevitably happens. They can't get into the gym and they only get two sessions done. And it's like, look, I've fallen off the plan, and it just falls to the wayside. Whereas you've got this flexible approach where, look, if you really wanted to, you can maybe catch up and do four the next week. But you'll probably just fall straight back into routine and continue on doing your threes. And this is the framework we talked about at the start. Like, in 5 years' time, is it going to matter that you missed one workout on 1 week? Probably not. So don't spend more than 5 minutes worrying about it. Just get back on track and focus on what you can control that day. Yes, you might be busy. Yes, you might be very time poor, not be able to make it in the gym. What can you do? Okay, you can make sure you make good food choices, and you can do your best to get 7 to 9 hours sleep. Focus on what you can control. So I think that's a piece where lots of people slip up, and you do a really, really good job of that, of like life throws you a curveball and you're like, oh, you know what? This week I didn't foresee this stress coming into my life. Now's not a great week for me to be pushing for fat loss. I'll just go to maintenance, and then I'll go back into the aggressive fat loss the week after. Or when I feel that heaviness or lethargy has been lifted off my shoulders, I'll go back in. So I want to give you props, because that's something you do really, really well. And I think a lot of people can do better. And it's more for the mental aspect than the actual physical benefit or physiological gains that come from it. So yeah, props to you.
Cheers for that. Yeah, I think a lot of people do struggle with the whole, this is the plan and I'm going to stick to the plan, and if I'm off the plan, I'm off, and then I just either binge or just don't do
All
anything.
or nothing mindset.
Yeah, it's like fucking I've got to get back on the bandwagon. You hear that all the time. It's like just choose the right bandwagon first, and then you won't have to keep fucking falling off it. So
And carry
stop
some
putting
spares.
Yeah, stop putting so many restrictions around it. Like the restriction part is I think one of the biggest parts. What makes people fail is because they go, I'm eating this amount of calories, I'm having this many workouts in the week, I'm going to hit this amount of step count. And the step count thing as well, like I'm going to hit 10,000 steps, and it's like 9,550, and it's 10 o'clock at night. I have to go for a walk to get my steps at 10,000. Go to fucking bed. Go to bed. Like that is unhealthy. Like that, it's, I have done that before, and I'm like, well, I gotta catch myself. Like the whole point of the step count is just for you to be aware that you have to move throughout the day. If you see your trends throughout the day, like on a Sunday for me, it's like a lot lower than normal. It's like, oh, I've got to make sure I go for a walk because I'm not, working or doing whatever. So it's just another data point, making sure that you are exercising or at least like doing movement throughout the day, not to hit this specific 10,000 number that just got made up by the fucking the gadget guys, that made the fucking thing.
Gadget guys. It's just an arbitrary movement number, but I think that is a great point. Like if you're going for a walk like right before bed, that's now got to the point of it being an unhealthy mindset. So yeah,
I've been there, and I know people that have said that to
I've
me.
been there. I've been there myself. Not anymore. I can recall a day recently where I hit 9995 and I was like, five
Oh.
steps. Are you kidding me? I was like, I wish I just looked at my watch before. And then I was like, well, the fuck does 5 steps matter? Like, seriously, in the grand scheme of things, what does 5 steps matter?
Will it
So,
matter in 5 years, mate?
yeah, exactly. All right, you got a bread study you want to hit me with?
I do have a bread study that I want to hit you with. Now, this is an oldie, but a goodie, right? So it was a study in 2012 by Loria Cohen et al. And what they did was they compared weight loss in overweight and obese women on a low-calorie diet, with one group consuming bread and the other group, they told them no bread whatsoever. So diets were the same. Both groups saw improvements in weight and health markers, but the bread consuming group had fewer dropouts and better adherence. So it suggested that including bread might help sustain a
Eat the
low
damn
calorie
bread.
diet, without negatively impacting weight loss outcomes. But I honestly think it's the restriction part of you can't have bread. So what do you think when someone tells you can't have something? That exact thing. So it's like, I fucking just want bread right now. Like, why can't I have it? And that's why there was all
Literally.
these dropouts and worse adherence. So I thought that was, and it just fucking smooth sailing just into our last previous conversation. So I think it's
Yeah,
great.
literally, it's a case of I remember being in Athens up at the Acropolis. There's this, I'm walking through this thing, and there's this unnecessary sign that says, do not touch. Now, I would not have even thought of touching it had it not been for that sign there. But you best believe that I touched it just because that sign there. Same with you in Iceland. There was that little tiny little rope barrier, and it said, do not cross. And it was like, there's nothing on the other side of this.
No, there wasn't.
What did you do? You took a tiny little step over and you're like, little things like that. But this is the restriction aspect of a diet. When you're told you can't have something, what do you think of? Or you're not allowed to eat donuts. Okay. Well, when can you have a donut on this diet? Like, when can you have it? You're going to be constantly thinking about that. Whereas when nothing is off limits and you can have the donut, the reframe is, what do I want to eat? Not what can't I eat? And thinking about that, what can't I eat? What can't I eat? What can't I eat? It's like, what do I want to eat? And that question can then be reframed into that supports my body composition goals, that fuels my training performance, that optimizes my cognitive function, that will get me good sleep and restoration and recovery, that will have me feeling good and not upset my digestion. So
Or just tastes fucking good.
yeah, exactly. Like there's so many different aspects. I didn't touch on the taste one because that's how 80% of the population pick their food, is purely based off taste, and they ignore all the other aspects. So that's why I
Exactly.
didn't touch. That's why I didn't touch on
They're
that one.
already doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got a study for you too.
Go.
This one is on athletic performance and free weights versus machines. So machines often have a reputation of not being functional, and that's because they're unnatural. Like, you're not moving your body with weight. Your body's fixed and you're sort of moving the weight in regards to moment arms. But a recent study in the key is here, strength trained men. So they were men that had previously done strength training. They performed a full body workout 3 times a week, and I think the exercises were, let me have a look here, barbell squat, barbell rows, overhead presses with either a barbell or a machine. So I'm assuming the machine would have been a hack squat, a machine shoulder press and like a seated row. And after 2 months, there were no significant differences between the groups' gains in their functional strength. So this is things like balance, power, sprinting, jumping, explosiveness, etc. Now, the conclusion of the study pretty much just says that most strength is a result of improved or an optimized motor neuron coordination. And you can get that just from building muscle alone. So just because of the fact that they were strength training and they were progressively overloading and creating more muscular build or gaining muscle, it saw the same, essentially the same improvements or no significant difference in improvements, regardless of whether it was barbell or machines. Now, the caveat to this that I want to throw in is you may build more muscle in a machine because you don't have to create this stability yourself. It's also less taxing and you can just focus on what you want to do. However, it's not exactly applicable to a sport. So that's where the more free movement of like your barbell and dumbbell lifts will play a role. So in the grand scheme of things, do both. I hate the either-or discussions. They really frustrate me. Like, do free weights and do machines. So one's going to be more taxing on the central nervous system, and that's the free weights because of the extra need for stability, balance, coordination. And one's going to be less taxing for that purpose. But you're going to be able to overload that one more and probably gain more muscle and strength because you don't have to create the stability and you don't have to coordinate as well because it's a fixed moment arm. So do both. Like there's no argument between the two, but I found that really interesting that the machine versus free weights, like they separated them, no significant differences in functional strength.
Yeah, I was always wondering why they thought that free weights were better. 'Cause I was like, yeah, but I can push a lot heavier on a machine.
A lot.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, but you all these stabilized muscles. I was like, oh, sure. And then, yeah, this study came out. I've read other studies also showing the same thing, which is good news for everyone out there. Like, if you think that you have to be in a gym with machines and stuff, or vice versa, like you have to always just do body weights, dumbbell work or barbell work, like just pick your poison. You can do both, you can do either or. Like, doesn't really matter. Like, that's why I love weight training, because there's so much things, like, so many different intricacies of like, this little angle here or this machine here, let's try this or try this out.
It's
It's a
so customizable.
playground. Yeah, I love it. That's great.
And that's the benefit of strength training compared to running. Like strength training is completely customizable and moldable to your individual genetic makeup, muscle lengths, goals, fitness capabilities, injuries. Running isn't.
No.
Like if you've got a some sort of ailment with your leg and you don't have the ability to run, well, you can't just, well, I suppose you could, but push through that. Whereas with strength training, and let's say you've got a slightly uneven hips, you can do some isolation exercises and get some benefit with both legs. You can still train the upper body. Like it's completely customizable to your individual needs, preferences, and goals. So, and
Would
that's the
recommend.
gripe on, that's the, yeah, that's the gripe on group fitness as well, right? Like, it's not tailored specifically to you. Yes, it's moving your body. Yes, it's some level of resistance training, essentially cardio with weights, though. But it's not individual to you. So you may be doing a repetitive movement that's going to exaggerate your shoulder injury more. Or you may be doing a repetitive movement in a group class or setting that aggravates your back injury more. So it needs to be tailored specifically to you. And this is where the group fitness setting sort of fails.
Yeah, with the low rest
Yeah.
and all that kind of stuff.
Harder, faster, more. Speaking of
Harder.
more, speaking of more, I want more facts from you. Do you have a fact for me?
Yep. All right. So, owls are the only bird that lowers their upper eyelid to blink. All other birds raise their lower lid to blink.
That's cool. Is that why they look a bit funky with their eyes when they're.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. When you see an owl, you're like, "Oh, they're blinking weird," because
Yeah.
you're so used to other birds blinking different ways.
Interesting. I love that you brought an animal one to me.
Yeah, thought you'd like that.
Okay. So my one is to do with the moorland hawker dragonfly.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the female, when confronted with a sexually aggressive male, will freeze midair, crash to the ground, and lie motionless, faking their death to avoid the sexually aggressive male.
Yeah, right. It's
Now,
one way of doing it.
I think the human equivalent of this is pretending to already be asleep.
Honey, I've got a headache.
Yeah,
Got a headache.
I've got a headache. Yeah, I think the human equivalent is pretending to already be asleep. But yeah, the moorland hawker dragonfly freezes midair, crashes to the ground, and essentially fakes their own death in order to avoid the sexually aggressive male dragonfly.
There you go.
It certainly is one way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that for females. If they see someone approaching them that's aggressive, just to lie there.
That's sexually aggressive.
Yeah, I would fucking run.
Enough of our jibber jabber. Health and fitness question times.
Let's do it. Hey, just before we get to the questions, if you've enjoyed this episode or previous episodes, could you please share it with someone that would get value from it? The only way to grow the brain body movement is if you share this. It's just a few tap of the fingers and it would truly mean the world to both of us. Thanks again for listening. All right, let's get back to the show.
Okay, question number one. I'm currently following a 4 day per week upper lower program. How would you recommend I structure my training if I can only get 3 days in?
Okay. So the question is it mainly like he always needs or he or she needs to get 3 days all the time, or is it just some days? Do you
I'm
know?
assuming they're usually following 4 weeks, but there might be like a week where they only get three. That's the way I interpret the question. Like they usually get four. They're fairly consistent, but life has thrown them a
Thrown him.
curveball. They're gonna have to miss a day this week. How would you restructure or structure their training if they can only get in for 3 days?
Okay, so there's a few ways I would do this. So usually you're doing your, it says upper lower program, so it'd be upper lower or whatever on your 4 days. Now, if for some reason you've already done the upper lower upper and then it comes up you can't do that fourth day, then it's fine to just do that lower again on the next day, unless you're very superstitious of I have to do upper on Monday or whatever, like do whatever, just fine. You can then, if it's like, if that's the case, then you can work that lower in over time, with the other exercises as well, if you really wanted to. So you could just like chuck that in on your upper day if you really wanted to. Like, say there's four exercises, you could just like add them in extra over that week if you really wanted to. You could skip it altogether, or you could, what you could do. That's in the instance of it just came up and I really can't do it. In the instance where you know you're going to do the 3 days, there's another few options that you could do. You could go upper lower and then you could combine the last two upper and lowers together and then spread out the volume. I'd have to look at the program. It's really hard to see it, but like you would pretty well split it. You could go upper lower full body, or you could do all full body, one, two, three, or you could just just forget about it and like not even worry about it. It's fine. It's like we said at the start of the podcast, like that lower day, whatever. Like it's fine.
What about that calves, Brad?
Yeah, I mean you could do them every day anyway. You just gotta do them every day. But it's really just like how bad did you want that, say upper or lower day, whatever you missed kind of thing. And if you are going to in the future, like the 3 days, like you could put those bigger compound movements on the first on the day that you're going to miss, and then just bring them into the first 3 days and drop a couple of the smaller lifts that probably won't push you that far to the muscle building. So you kind of also got to rearrange your exercises in a way where you're not going to lose out too much on that day that you leave, because that's, it's really, it really depends. And this is such a, what's your program so we can work it out together instead of blower kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna go answer a little bit differently and purely just go off the enjoyment piece. So let's say you get your upper lower and then you realize, okay, I've only got one session left in me in the week. Just pick the exercises that you enjoy the most from those last two, pick an even number from each, combine them, there you get a full body day for yourself. Let's say you know at the start it's gonna be 3 days. Do your favorite upper and lower, considering you are following a structured program. Pick your favorite upper and lower, and then from your two least favorite, then combine your favorite exercises from those, and then you got an upper, lower, full body. That'd be the structure I'd go with. Now, let's say you've got in your three, like you said yourself, and you've gone upper, lower, upper, and you're like, I can't get in the fourth. I thought I'd be able to, but I can't. Just pick back up where you left off next week. Like
If you're
missing a
not too
session's.
structured with that
Yeah,
Monday, yeah, that's what I do.
missing your session's not going to be the end of the world. And if you are super structured with the Monday, I challenge you to go with a lower body. Like, throw yourself outside of your comfort zone. Break that structure. Don't be so, like, I complimented you on your flexibility. So this could be something that if someone needs that routine, needs that structure, or let me rephrase that, feels as though they need that routine. Feels as though they need that structure. This could be a great opportunity if you go, you know what? I'll listen to the boys answer that question. I'm actually going to start with a lower body day because that's what I missed last week. And I want to keep some balance between upper and lower because I don't want to be walking around looking like a Dorito. So, yeah, I would challenge that person that's wanting that set structure on the Monday. If I start with this, mix it up, change it, and prove yourself that you don't have to do that. It's not a necessary requirement in order for you to achieve your goals. But yeah, that's the way I do it. Essentially upper, lower, full body, and just go the exercises that you enjoy the most. Yes, you could restructure it so you're getting the most bang from your buck from those exercises in both of those 2 days that you combine in together. But I just go for the enjoyment piece because that's going to keep you the most consistent and it's going to keep you coming back. And I mean, a perfectly done program performed inconsistently isn't going to get as good results as a mediocre program done consistently. So the consistency aspect is the big one. So choose what you enjoy and what you can see yourself sticking with. If it's three and then you can't get in your fourth, then just pick right back up where you left off. You missed one, so be it. It's not going to matter in 5 years.
No. And I could see where it might be like you have a training partner and it's like, well, this is the structure. You missed it because maybe you were sick or whatever, or you had to do something, and then your training partner is back at that day as well. That's when you're just like, well, you just gotta let it go, mate, and then try and pick it up another day, the week after or something. So that's also another thing. 'Cause I know that that could be like someone listening right now, it might be like, well, I train with someone and we got to do it on these kind of days. So it's like, well, you got to find other days as well that you can get it in or just let it go. But that was the other thing of like, if you are by yourself doing the program, just continue on with the program. Don't always just do chest Mondays. Like this was like back in the day when people used to do, well, they probably still do it, but it's the body part
Still does,
splits.
still common.
Yeah, the body part splits of like Monday, chest, whatever. That's when you're just like, no, you got to keep just continuing on with your program. So then it flows. Like it flows a certain way. It's if it's good program, it structures in a certain way. So then it allows for the next session to really push yourself and not get too fatigued from previous exercises from the couple of days beforehand. Like that's a good training program. Don't try and like mix and match them too much because it's structured in a way where it's like this bleeds nicely into this. This warms you up for that. You're not going to be too sore from this. This is a lot of damage. You have a few more days rest here, blah, blah, blah. And that you got to be very like workout one is workout one, two, three, four, they're numbered. Just go in sequence. Like instead of going, oh, I might do three here, I might do two here. And then you're wondering why you're so sore doing two because, you did, seated leg curls and they destroyed your hamstrings, and the next day you're trying to do RDLs. It's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, there is a structure to the program for a reason. Okay, question number two. I have an extremely weak core and overactive hip flexors. How can I strengthen my core without my hip flexors taking over?
And how people know that, for one. Like, how do you know that it's taking over?
I'm assuming, like, let's say they hold a plank, their hips shoot up in the air and they can feel their hip flexors taking the load. Or let's say they go and do a sit up or a crunch and they feel it in their hip flexors and not their core. Maybe they have a hard time bracing, and in a squat they can feel their hip flexors go and they struggle to load their back properly. It could there could be many, many ways. Or maybe someone's pointed it out to them, being like, "Hey, you've got quite a weak core, and your hip flexors are quite tight." Could be someone that's just gone through a pregnancy and they've had their abdomen wall separated, and then they've been sitting a lot, breastfeeding, and then their hip flexors have shortened up because of it. So it's a
Yeah,
few
that's
reasons how
different.
someone could tell. Yeah.
Well, you're asking some core without the hip flexors taking over. So a lot of that could just be exercises that won't involve the hip flexors, obviously. So you could do what's that one where Caliph press that strengthen the core. I mean, you've got your leg raises, but you need to do them in a specific way that your hip flexors actually don't engage as well. You could stretch them out too, because they might be really tight or whatever, and they might be taken over from that. They also might be weak too. So you might actually go the other direction of actually strengthening your hip flexors so then they don't take over, so they're not like fucked. But you've got your main core exercises without like if so doing a plank, you think that does increase hip flexors as well?
If the hips shoot up in the air, then they're going to be loading their hip flexors and their abs, or their core as such isn't taking a lot of the load. It's a lot of it's going on their hip flexors. That's why hips often shoot up with a plank.
Yeah,
It's
so
because
you.
the core fatigues, so the hip flexors are like, "Hey, I'm strong, I'm dominant, I can take over. Let me do my thing."
Yeah, so that's why you want to anteriorly pelvic tilt
Pelvically tilt. Yep,
yep
yep.
your core when you're doing a plank like that, side plank. I'm sure you can say a few more.
Yeah, I think with strengthening your core without your hip flexors taking over, majority of it comes down to actually exercise execution and technique. Like knowing how to articulate your spine without the hip flexors taking over. And like you mentioned, leg raise, your basic like football sit up, like you can do these and your hip flexors take over because you're allowing them to take over by using a poor exercise technique. So yeah, speak to the gym, get a trainer to watch you perform the movements. I would start with bracing. That's the way that I would go in terms of strengthening your core. Just teaching yourself to brace your core effectively. You mentioned the Pale-Lof press there. Could just be as simple as like holding a plank until the point where your hips shoot up, and then just timing that and see if you can get that time to progress. You got your side planks. There's a whole heap that you can do that don't involve like a bending and articulating the spine, which is the function of the abs. But considering you want to strengthen your core, start with bracing. So like plank, side plank, Pale-Lof press. Once you get more advanced with that, like it's pretty hard for hip flexors to take over in a side plank, and that will help strengthen your core. So there's plenty you can do, but if you're looking for stronger abs and your ability to flex and bend your spine, which is the role of the abs, then you need to have correct exercise technique. Like I can do a leg raise and I can make it, I can feel it in my hip flexors, or I can feel it in my abs based on how I articulate my pelvis. Same with doing a football sit up. I can feel it in my hip flexors if I allow my hips to shoot down into the ball. Or if I press my feet into the floor and lift my hips up slightly, I can make it purely ab. So it's your exercise execution and technique that's probably letting you down a little bit here. So maybe seek the help of a professional in your gym, or just start with bracing if you don't want to seek out the help of a professional. And that would be your planks, your side planks, your Pale-Lof press. Once you get stronger at bracing, you may find that you're able to articulate your spine a bit better and have more motor neuron control through your midsection.
And I wonder if they're doing like the big lifts as well, because that's obviously going to strengthen a bit of your core too. So make sure you're doing the big lifts.
Yeah, that's it. That could be where the question's coming from. Like they're finding that they're struggling with the big lifts because of their weak core, which is again, it's a bracing issue. So A really good one here could potentially be like a dead bug, and it's really easy to feel, right? Like you're laying on your back and you just try and maintain a flat back the whole time, like you're pressing your belly button into the floor. So for those that aren't watching, like listening, you're laying on your back, hands in the air, and you're trying to press your belly button down to the floor and maintain a flat back, and then just extend one leg out, maintain that flat back, and pull it back in, and then do the same with the opposite side. Maintain that flat back. So breathe, brace, maintain your flat back, extend the leg out, come back in. And yes, there is going to be some hip flexor involved in the extending of the hip because that's what you're doing. But because you're maintaining that flat back the whole time, and you can feel it, you can put your hands under your lower back if you really want to feel it, and just make sure there's constant pressure coming down into your hands or your fingertips underneath your lower back. That's going to be a great way of you knowing you're actually hitting your core and not hitting your hip flexors.
Those are brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah. If done again, the key is if done correctly. Like if you start to arch your lower back, then bang, what are you going to feel? Hip flexors. So a lot of it is exercise technique and execution. So that's where I would start, would be the exercise technique and execution. And if I did say approach someone at the gym, like a trainer at the gym, YouTube's a great resource. I mean, if you're still not feeling it and you've gone through several YouTube videos, then that's where you're probably going to need someone to actually move your body into the position so you can feel it there. Okay. Question number three. I'm a cyclist. Will weight training help me get better? Yes. Next question. Question number four.
What's the weirdest? Yeah, definitely. Like, it's like if you became, Ronnie Coleman, it's probably not going to help that much because, you're massive and you're probably going to be a bit slower. But at, a certain degree, increasing your muscle bellies, like that's going to increase your oxygen utilization and stuff as well because they're bigger. So, and yeah, VO2 max is going to get better just with weight training itself. And they help with each other as well. More cardio too helps with the weight training and vice versa. So definitely go all for
Have you seen cyclist quads?
and calves, man. I think you should
Oh
start
yeah,
cycling,
fuck
bro.
them, fuck them. No, I'm not cycling. But there was a guy on a, I think it might have been the British cyclist team that was labelled Quadzilla because his quads were just
Yeah,
absolutely,
I remember.
absolutely ridiculous. And he's a cyclist, and I don't think he built those quads just purely from cycling. I don't think there's enough load and resistance there. So yes, it will help. If you look at all of your elite level sprinters, other than the freak that was Usain Bolt, majority of them are often quite well built because they're teaching their body to have that explosive power, which is what you want when you're cycling. You want that explosive power or that muscular endurance. So yes, weight training will help. You can either, let's say you're a short distance cyclist, you can train for that explosive strength, do some jumping trap bar deadlifts, some back squats, single leg, like lots of single explosive single leg work. If you're a long distance cyclist, then you can train in your high rep range and build some muscular endurance and do it that way. So,
Supersets and stuff like
yeah,
that.
exactly. Weight training will 100% make you better. You just got to make sure that adding in weight training doesn't overload you on volume with your current cycling training, like that you've got a maximum recoverable bit of amount of volume. So keep that in mind of just adding more doesn't always equal more results. So you may have to strip some of your cycling away a little bit to introduce some strength training. It's essentially, this is what I've done with in this marathon prep. I was training 5 days per week of lifting weights. I'm now down to three because I've increased my running volume and my running volume continues to increase until I start to taper for this event. So I've had to reduce the volume of the amount of weight training I was doing in order to increase the volume of amount of running. So that's a little caveat I will throw out there. If you're just doing cycling currently and you're looking to introduce weight training to give you a little bit of a benefit.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to bloody do a leg day right before you go on cycle, would you?
Nah, last thing you want to do. Like
Common sense.
before my long runs, I am not touching legs at all. So the previous time I touched legs was running. And then
Exactly.
before that would be 4 days before. So like you've got to take these things into consideration. Okay, final question. Question number four. What's the weirdest meathead thing you have done to hit your protein goals? I can't wait to hear yours.
I don't know, man. I saw this and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll think of something and I forgot. What's yours?
Okay, so you want to hear mine first. The weirdest thing I've done is probably setting aside a protein shaker on my bedside table, waking up in the middle of the night and guzzling that thing back. And that was just an old myth, urban myth. Another thing I did, and this was recommended to me by a juiced to the absolute gills semi-amateur professional bodybuilder that was like in the crowd of eat 10 times a day to stoke your metabolic for like the whole the elite gym bro. He recommended getting like a Pepsi Max or like a Diet Coke and blending some tuna with it, and it hides the taste of the tuna. I was extremely skeptical, and I was like, you know what? I'll just try it just this one time. I had one sip and went, nah, down the sink. What, like, what the fuck? But no, probably the weirdest meathead thing I did was the like having a mass gain of protein shake right before bed, and then having another one if I happened to wake up in the middle of the night, and then bang again first thing in the morning. So it's like three shakes a day if I happen to wake up in the middle of the night. That's probably the weirdest meathead thing I've done to hit protein. I've done some other weird meathead things, but not in order to hit protein.
Yeah, see, as you were saying, a few things came up, which was great because I was like, oh, what the fuck was it? Yeah, some of the weirdest meathead things I've done to get my protein in. Well, the main one was not the main one. One of them was just sipping amino acids throughout the day. Not really good to hit protein, but it still was a little bit of protein in those drinks.
Flavored water.
Flavored water throughout the whole day. And then another one was obviously having the casein right before bed, like every single night when I didn't even need to. And the one that I thought of when you were speaking was I would go out to town, I would park the car, go out to town, and then it would be like, I don't know, 12 or 1 o'clock. And then I would go into my car and I would have a full like chicken and rice meal or chicken and a broccoli meal waiting for me in an esky.
Is this on a night out?
Yeah, on a night out.
You're kidding me.
Was, I think
It's better than
that
getting a
was
2 a.m., 3 a.m. kebab,
that's when I
but
was prepping, I reckon, as well. I was like, I'll go out. I wasn't drinking, but I'll go out, but I need to hit my protein. So yeah, I remember going, parking the car and then yeah, just leaving it there and going there after in the middle of the night.
that's gold.
Yeah, I forgot I did that until you said like your thing.
Yeah, what's wild about that, having that casein shake or having a mass gainer before going to bed, right? This is when I just wanted to be huge. It interrupts your sleep, and that's probably going to impact your ability to build muscle more than the actual getting the calories in.
Yeah.
So, like doing that is absolutely wild. Now, a shake's not going to impact as much as actual food, but it's still straining your digestive system, and if your digestive system is active, you're not going to get as deep restorative sleep, and therefore you're not going to build as much muscle from the training stimulus you sent it through the day. So it's a bit backwards, that bit of advice, but it is something I definitely did, along with at least attempting the Coke Zero, Pepsi Max, and can of tuna. I was struggling to get in protein, and the reason I was struggling to get in protein was because the what he recommended to me was like 280 grams of protein a day, and I'm like a 90-year-old. Sorry,
90-year-old.
I'm like a 90 kilo 17-year-old. Like 280 grams of protein. You're kidding? That's over three times my body weight in protein. It's just excessive.
Yeah,
And
it
so I was
literally is.
struggling to get it in. And he's like, drink it. I'm like, oh, how many more shakes do you want to have? I have a mass gainer before bed. I have WPI in the middle of the night. I have one in the morning. Like I can't. Surely you're not wanting me to have more shakes. He's like, no, just blend the tuna with Coke Zero. You can't taste it.
Jesus.
Fuck. Fucking, I'll tell you one thing, you can bloody taste it.
Fuck
But
that.
it's something that you like, mate. It's caffeinated tuna.
Oh yeah, that's the best.
Yeah,
Fuck the tuna. Oh my God. Spring
I
water,
know.
washing it down. Ugh. No
I
thanks.
know. Anyway, meathead days are behind us, and into more tangible things to look after ourselves. But that's a wrap for today's episode. If you your questions answer in the future, make sure you are following us at brain.body.movement, at Brad Dapper, and at Brock_Duglish. And you can ask us a question whenever we put up a sticker box or shoot us a DM. Now, we would just like to say Thank you so much for listening to us. If you got any value from this episode, we would really appreciate it if you shared it to your Instagram stories, and don't forget to tag us so we can say thanks. We would also appreciate it if you shared it with family and friends and left us a 5-star review. But before we go, if we can leave you with a few things, make your damn bed, get your steps in, and be kind to one another.
Cheers.
Look at life through this lens. Will it matter in 5 minutes, 5 hours, or 5 years?
Oh. Sorry,
Sorry.
mate. Sorry. I'm sorry, bro. Damn, Zara got me good. Caffeine free, mama. The delay was a bit there. Sorry, man. No, bro. Will this matter? Well, I don't think it'll matter.
That's going to be the best start to a response to an unsolicited advice ever. Oh, that is too good.